Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Carla and Jordan have stumbled upon secret experiments being conducted beneath the abbey, but they have been discovered by the mysterious Brother Pharaoh. Chapter 26. Carla sighed and pushed herself to her feet. Pharaoh moved his lamp to shine directly on her.
"Well, now," came the monk's surprised voice from behind the light, "an unexpected guest. You are part of the Kohayan contingent, are you not?"
"I am," Carla replied.
"And how did you find your way down here, I wonder?"
Abruptly, Jordan scrambled to his feet, bumping his head on the low ceiling as he rose.
"I'm sorry, brother. It was me."
"Two of you?" Pharaoh asked.
"Three," Carla said, reaching down and hauling the protesting Beneto to his feet. "Although this one came down here on his own, he's been following Drusus for at least the past 2 nights."
"Has he?"
There was a long pause.
"There appears to be a great deal to discuss. Come back this way, where we will have more room to talk."
Pharaoh backed up to the table, and a moment later, the lamp on that table was relit. Pharaoh set his own lamp on the table and turned to await them, holding his hands behind his back.
"So," he said, once the three of them had joined him, "we have three uninvited guests in the tunnels tonight. Are there any others with you who might be exploring elsewhere?"
"No, brother," Jordan said quickly. He gestured at Beneto. "I don't know what he's doing here, but we came down here ourselves, and we told no one what we were about."
"I see," Pharaoh said, rolling his shoulders.
Carla felt something strange for a moment, a fluctuation of mana in the air.
What was that? She wondered. Did Pharaoh do that?
"You have been following my colleague for at least 2 days," Pharaoh said, looking now at Beneto. "Is that correct?"
Beneto reminded her of a surly child caught stealing a cookie.
"No," he snapped. "I went to the bathhouse this evening to refresh myself before bed, but out of curiosity, I decided to explore, and I came upon the tunnels by accident. Then I got lost and followed the light I saw ahead."
"And why did you not call for aid once you had found us?" Pharaoh asked him, shaking his head.
His arms were moving slightly, as if he was toying with some small object behind his back. Carla felt the mana around her shift and twist again.
"What are you doing?" she demanded, pointing at the monk.
Pharaoh's gaze flashed to her, his eyes wide in surprise.
"I can feel you!"
Suddenly, Pharaoh swept both his hands forward, the fingers twisted into strange gestures, and in the next moment, there was a flash of purple light that dazzled her. Her limbs suddenly locked, all her muscles contracting at once, immobilizing each other. She couldn't turn her head, but in her peripheral vision, she saw that Jordan and Beneto were similarly afflicted, trembling in place. Pharaoh lowered his hands, studying her.
"How did you sense me, child?"
"Most curious."
He smiled ruefully.
"One never knows what the day will bring. Another long night ahead, it appears."
He shifted his attention to Beneto.
"You first, Sabrian."
He raised his hand and made several graceful, quick gestures.
"You may now speak, but I will know if you lie. Why are you here tonight?"
Beneto's eyes were wide with fear, his lips curled back from his teeth in a rictus.
I was following Drusus," he admitted. "There are those in the Empire who would pay well to know what the Maritii have sent him here to study."
"Ah, greed," Pharaoh said, sounding disappointed. "How did you find your way down here?"
"I followed you last night to the bathhouse, but by the time I entered, you were nowhere to be found. So tonight I came to the bathhouse early and watched as you opened the door that led into the tunnels."
Pharaoh sighed. "The price of complacency."
He looked at Beneto for a long time, considering something. While he remained occupied, Carla turned her attention inward to the spell that immobilized her. She had never encountered a pattern like this one. It permeated the muscles of her body, forcing them to contract and relax constantly. It was oddly decentralized, focusing on her four limbs and head, but leaving most of her torso unaffected. In a flash, she realized that this was keeping her alive. If the spell also sent her heart and lungs into spasms, like as not she'd already be dead. She had to marvel at the spell's craftsmanship, even as she struggled to unravel it, plucking carefully at the pattern, looking for loose threads. Brother Pharaoh sighed again, still addressing Benito.
A pity I did not find you last night.
He stepped forward and put his hand on Benito's head.
But one problem at a time.
Kerla felt the mana swirl around Pharaoh again, this time moving up his arm and into Benito, penetrating his skull and settling into a pattern there. Benito's jaw clenched and his trembling became more frantic. A moment later, the monk lifted his hand from Benito, who instantly slumped to the ground with no more grace than a puppet with cut strings.
"Now, young Jordan," the monk said.
He made the same gesture in the air that he had made at Benito.
"Answer my questions, if you please."
Jordan looked both horrified and fascinated.
"What did you do to him?"
"He will forget tonight, that is all. It is regrettable that he followed us last night as well. Those memories cannot now be erased, but at least he will not remember how to enter the tunnels."
He sighed.
"I will have to devise some reason to keep him from following us tomorrow evening. How tedious."
Are you going to do that to me?"
"Oh, my dear boy, you've nothing to fear. It's not as if I haven't done this to you before."
Jordan stared at the monk in stunned silence.
"Oh, yes," Pharaoh went on, looking mildly amused. "In the past 6 years, this is the 8th time I have caught you down here."
He sighed.
"But this time you've brought someone else with you, and that does make things more complicated."
Kerla racked her brain for a plan. Pharaoh's spell on her was starting to wear off, even without any conscious effort on her part. Like a sugar cube dropped into a glass of water, his spell was being dissolved by her own magical ability.
"But not fast enough," she realized. "He'll be done with Jordan in a moment, and I'll be next."
"Why did you bring her down here with you?" Pharaoh asked Jordan.
"We were going to find the transcript of an interview taken some 30 years ago to help her friend Captain Grievous with his research."
"Very interesting," Pharaoh said, and he sounded as if he approved of this. "But you know where the archives are. Why did you come down here instead?"
"We saw a flicker of light at the far end of the tunnel and came to investigate. I was worried there might be an unattended fire down here somehow."
Pharaoh sighed. "Sloppy. I should have strung a curtain across the entrance. Well, thank you, young man. I must commend your sense of duty, at the very least."
He stepped forward, extending his hand toward Jordan's brow.
"Now, just relax. This doesn't hurt."
In desperation, Kerla released her illusion, her appearance suddenly swirling, shifting. Pharaoh froze, his jaw dropping in shock as he turned to look at her. Kerla seized the small portion of extra mana that had come free around her and poured it into the part of Pharaoh's spell that kept her right arm frozen. The spell wavered and came apart, and in the next instant she touched Pharaoh's hand. When Kerla had set out on this journey weeks before, she had accidentally cast a spell on herself that had left her legs completely numb, unable to move or feel pain. She had been thinking about that mistake on and off since then, but hadn't really explored any possible applications of that embarrassing lesson. Until now. There was no subtlety to the spell she poured into Pharaoh, no grace or efficiency. She simply forced his limbs to go slack, the way she had once done to herself. Instantly, the monk's arm went limp, and his legs buckled under him, pulling him out of her grasp. Making one gasp of surprise, he landed in a heap, his robes fluttering and settling over him. Kerla took one staggering step, then another. Pharaoh's spell was broken, but she'd used a good deal of her own strength to do it. Trembling, she leaned against the table, catching her breath. Behind her, Jordan made a sudden, choking gasp.
You,
the young man stammered, staring at her.
"You're an el—"
"Don't say it," Kerla replied wearily, holding up a hand.
"Please."
She closed her eyes, then forced them open again. The room had begun to spin behind her eyelids. Raising her head, she looked directly at Jordan.
"This isn't the way I intended to let you know, Jordan, but please understand, I did plan on telling you."
Jordan continued to stare at her. She watched his gaze linger on her ears, then her eyes. He was doing what every human who'd seen her change her appearance did, trying to locate some part of the person he had come to recognize, seeking to attach those memories to what he now saw before him. Even Teska had done it. "My nose," she finally told him.
"What?"
"My nose. It's the one part of my face that really doesn't change with my illusion." She wrinkled her nose at him and was pleased to see a hesitant, nervous smile cross his face.
"Jordan, it's still me. In fact, this is the real me. There's a lot to explain, and I promise you I will, but now is not the time."
She pushed herself away from the table and stood up straight, pressing on through her fatigue.
"Can you move at all? Don't try to fight it, just test it."
Jordan closed his eyes.
"The trembling is less than it was," he said after a moment, "and I can move my fingers a little."
Carla glanced down at Jordan's hand and smiled at the flexing fingers.
"That sounds like the spell's starting to wear off. Hopefully it won't last much longer."
Jordan's eyes flew open, locking with hers.
"You mean you don't know?"
"I've never seen this spell before," she admitted. "I don't want to tamper with it if I don't have to. It might make things worse."
"But you're an..."
She raised a warning eyebrow, and Jordan paused.
"An expert," he said at last.
She couldn't help but laugh, a long, weary peal that racked her frame.
"Oh, no," she said, catching her breath at last. "I'm no expert. I probably know the least about magic of any of my people."
"Speaking of which," she said, turning to the still form of Brother Pharaoh. She knelt beside him and lifted the hood away from the monk's face. He was awake and breathing, staring back at her with glittering, suspicious eyes. His illusion had collapsed during her counterattack, but she was surprised to see that he didn't actually look all that different. The graying blonde hair had turned a bluish white, and his age lines were gone, replaced by chalk-white skin that sparkled with a silvery sheen, the hallmarks of the Air Clan. His face was sharper than it had been in human form, and his ears were long and tapered to points, of course, but the biggest difference was his eyes. They were of a brilliant blue that no human eye had ever possessed, rich and bright as the clearest summer sky.
"Faran," Carla said, knowing who this must be. The sudden widening of the elf's eyes told her that her guess was right. "The abbot told me how the two of you met. You made quite an impression on him. I guess that worked both ways. Let me guess, you heard about the abbey, and a few years later, a young monk named Brother Pharaoh showed up at the front gate, and you've been here ever since."
Faran's lips twitched into a smile.
"Well reasoned, child."
"Does the abbot know you're here?"
"Of course not. It was young Walter's description of this place that impressed me, not his fascination."
Faran closed his eyes for a moment, frowning.
"This anesthetic effect is quite thorough. There is no pattern to unravel."
"It'll wear off," she assured him. "Might take a few hours, though."
"I see," Faran sighed. "Quite innovative. However did you come up with it?"
"A happy accident," Carla told him. "But I'm afraid I'm the one asking the questions." She pointed back at Jordan.
"When will that spell wear off?"
"Hmm?" Faran rolled his eyes in Jordan's direction, and Carla realized that the elf had actually forgotten Jordan was there.
"Oh, not much longer. It's not designed for a long-term application. The subject's muscles would eventually tear themselves apart from constant struggle."
It wasn't his words, but the casual way he said them that made Carla feel a sudden chill.
"Well, we certainly wouldn't want that," she commented dryly.
As Carla looked down at him, she suddenly realized that she didn't know what question to ask next. There were simply too many, and now she couldn't recall a single one. Faran turned his gaze back to her, sensing her hesitation. Then he smiled, as if he had just solved some internal puzzle.
"Let me use my reason as well. You are Kerla Esa Kirlan, daughter of Kure and Kelia."
She froze, staring at him.
"How do you—" "You are not the only one who can come to obvious conclusions. You are clearly of the Kirlan, and you are here in the service of Duke Stephen. Unless the Duke has two of the Kirlan in his employ,
you could be no one else.
No, Kerla said, shaking her head. Not that. How do you know the names of my parents?
Because they were my friends, and the last time I saw them, your mother was carrying you inside her.
His smile widened.
It appears that we may each have a great deal to teach the other. Perhaps we may come to some arrangement?
Perhaps, she said. What are you seeking, and what are you offering?
A pledge of silence from you as to my true nature, a courtesy I shall gladly reciprocate. We have both, I dare say, had our fill of unwanted attention from humans. Beyond that, an agreement to meet at a later time and talk more privately, where we may answer each other's questions.
Why can't we talk now?
Farran nodded toward the unconscious Beneto.
We must make arrangements to get him out of here before he wakes. He will not be asleep much longer, and removing a subject's memories twice in so short a time could damage his mind.
And that's what you've done to me 8 times? Jordan demanded, furious.
7, technically, Farran corrected, sounding very much like the monk he pretended to be. This would have been the 8th. And I never did it more than once a day, so you should have suffered no permanent damage.
Permanent? Jordan muttered, looking horrified.
When I first discovered you down here, Farran went on, I removed your memories of the night, hoping that you would forget the existence of the tunnels. It can be quite dangerous down here, especially for a child exploring on his own. If you had slipped and broken your leg, it is likely no one would find you until long after you had wasted away, because no one would think to search for you down here. Even worse, not far beyond this chamber lies the underground river. The rocks there are wet and quite slippery. Anyone who fell into the water would be swept off into the darkness forever. He shrugged. But when I found you down here a week later, I realized you'd known of the tunnels before that first night we met, and I could not remove that knowledge. In fact, I learned you'd been coming down here for nearly a year. He smiled up at the young man. Well, I decided that if an accident hadn't claimed you already, you had as much right to use the tunnels as anyone else.
Jordan's mood did not improve.
But you kept making me forget, he snapped. Another, what, 5 or 6 times? Why?
Ah, Farran replied, looking evasive. Well, I wanted to allay your fears. If someone knew that you were using the tunnels, you'd likely be worried that one day you'd be punished for it. As someone who knows well the fear of having one's secrets discovered, I saw no need to burden you with that.
Jordan glared at him. That's it. That's the best excuse you can come up with? You took it upon yourself to let me live in ignorance, to take away portions of my memory against my will, to save me the pain of worrying about being caught?
He flexed one arm, testing the spell's waning strength.
I think it's more likely you just didn't want to be bothered, or you didn't want me knowing you were down here all the time either. And just what is it that you're doing down here, by the way? What are you working on with Drusus?
That is a private matter between him and myself, Farran replied. But I assure you that it will be of great scientific value in the future.
He sighed.
Jordan, you may think that I have protected my privacy too zealously, but look at it from my perspective. If you were caught down here, the worst that would happen to you would be a severe penance, most likely some long and tedious manual labor. But if my secret was revealed, I would have to leave the Abbey, expelled into a world that cares very little for my kind. Quite simply, I was not willing to put my life in the hands of an 11-year-old boy. If that bothers you, so be it. But I do not regret my decision.
Jordan stared at the floor in a sulk, realizing that was the closest thing to an apology he was going to get.
And now, you're not taking my memories again.
Farran glanced at Kerla in a silent query. Glaring down at him, Kerla shook her head firmly.
No, I suppose not, the elf said in resignation. Apparently I must put my life in your hands after all. Now, if you will excuse me for a few minutes, I need to regain my mobility.
There's no pattern to undo, Kerla said. You just have to let it wear off.
We don't have that sort of time, Farran replied. I must devise a new spell to counteract this effect. An antidote, if you will.
Kerala's eyebrows lifted in surprise.
You can do that?
Can't you?
Well, I suppose, but I've had some bad experiences experimenting with magic recently.
Farran gave her a curious look. One must always be extremely careful when developing a new spell. Fortunately, I specialize in spells that affect the body. This will not be so much of a new spell as a modification of a minor healing charm I already know. But I must consider this carefully. There is no margin for error. Excuse me.
He shut his eyes in concentration, and Kerla felt a faint stirring around her, the mana in the chamber drawing closer to Farran. Jordan's own mobility was quickly returning, so Kerla helped him move back to the tunnel entrance. She looked up at him to see the young man staring back at her.
Yes?
So, how were you going to tell me?
Tell you? Oh, about me?
She ran a hand through her hair.
And all this? Well, I must confess, I hadn't worked that out yet.
Jordan nodded. All right, then I'll ask something else. Why were you going to tell me?
Your illusion was flawless. No one saw through it, not even Pharaoh or whatever his real name is. Why would you bother letting me know your secret? What am I to you?
Kerla's mouth went dry, but as she decided if this was the moment to tell him, Jordan spoke again.
The Duke is my father, isn't he?
She gasped, not expecting him to say it first.
Yes, he is. Did you already know?
Jordan shook his head. I was never positive, but some time ago I began to suspect that I wasn't a real child of the Abbey. The abbot would only say that he'd tell me what I needed to know when I turned 18, and if I was being fostered here, then the Abbey wouldn't do it for free, so that narrowed the list considerably, and the Duke was near the top of the list right from the start. Widowed before I was born, no acknowledged heir, plus he's good friends with the abbot, and he actually studied here in his youth.
He met Kerla's eyes. Who is my mother?
Kerla shook her head.
I'm sorry, Jordan, I don't know. She was from Maipor, that's all my friend Teska told me before he died. We had a plan for me to learn the full mission in case something happened to him, but it didn't work. I've just been doing the best I can with what I was given, my lord.
Jordan gave a start. Don't call me that. I'm no nobleman. He stared sullenly at the floor. I don't know what I am. Hells, I don't even know what you are.
I'm your friend, Kerla told him, regardless of what color my hair is.
Jordan looked doubtful.
We can talk about this tomorrow, and I promise I'll answer any questions you have as best I can.
Ah, there, that's the trick of it, Farran suddenly called out, raising his left arm and flexing the fingers.
He began to trace small, delicate patterns in the air, and Kerla could feel a stronger tug on the mana around her. In a few moments, the elf stood up on shaky feet.
Quite a challenge, he said as he walked up to them, smiling. Now, we had best take care of our sleeping friend. Jordan, if you will carry him by the shoulders, I will get the other end, and we can take him back to the bathhouse.
What are we doing with him once we get there? Kerla asked.
Oh, we'll just leave him there, the elf replied matter-of-factly. His mind will fill in any blank pages in his memory. He'll assume he fell asleep.
Is that what you did with me all those times before?
Jordan grumbled, stirring out of his sulk.
Just dumped me somewhere.
Farran gave him an impatient sigh.
If you really must know, I carried you back to your bed, at least while you were small enough to do so. After that, I tucked you into an unobtrusive portion of the archives where no one was likely to stumble upon you. The far side of Chamber 5, where the chamber bends into a small nook.
A look of dread slowly dawned on Jordan's face.
I've woken up in that corner over a dozen times, but you said you only made me forget things 7 times.
Indeed, Farran replied, picking up Benito's legs, cradling his knees.
He looked at Jordan, waiting expectantly for him to take the Sabrian's shoulders.
I've only left you there the last 4 times I found you.
How fascinating! It appears that once you realized it was a safe place to sleep, you began to use it on your own. But only because you left me there in the first place, Jordan objected.
Farran set Benito's feet down.
Jordan, he said, sounding irritated for the first time, if you want to engage in a debate over causality, I would find that an interesting exercise, but this is not the time. This man will awaken before long, sooner if you continue to shout. I cannot edit his memories twice in one night, so if he regains consciousness, the only way to ensure his silence will be to kill him.
Jordan went very still, looking like someone had tossed a glass of water in his face.
Since that is not an option you can countenance, Faron went on sternly, let us get him to the bathhouse without further delay.
He picked up Benito's legs again. Jordan sullenly picked up Benito's shoulders, and with Carla holding the lamp to light their way, they entered the tunnel. Their progress was swifter than Carla had expected, now that they were not trying to be stealthy and had a good source of light. In almost no time at all, they were back in the main tunnel leading to the bathhouse, and shortly after that, they were carrying Benito up the wooden steps to the hidden door in the Hydro Works. It took a bit of careful handling to snake Benito through the pipes and scaffolding, but at last they found a dark, damp corner where he might have logically settled himself to watch for Drusus.
That will do, Faron said with satisfaction. Even if he actually waited in some other part of the room, he'll likely remember this as the spot where he waited for us. The mind has a wonderful ability to fill in blanks on its own.
He turned toward the curtained exit that led back to the main chamber, then stopped.
Oh my, how foolish of me.
He made a single flick of his hand and his appearance shifted back into that of Brother Pharaoh, the process taking only half the time it took for Carla. He watched as she applied her own disguise, raising a curious eyebrow.
Your technique is unusual. You are applying two spells instead of one. It's rather inefficient, if you don't mind me saying.
The mana's not strong enough in the quad to do it any other way, she told him. Down there, the best I can do is change the color of my skin and hair. Changing my features to look human as well is something I can't do without help.
Faron, or Pharaoh as he now looked, gave her a sad smile.
Regrettable, but necessary, I suppose. I don't know how you've done it. I couldn't imagine living any further south than this. It's been little better than bread and water since I arrived. Only in the last few years have I reliably been able to do more than this, he said, gesturing at his face.
He gave her a resigned shrug.
At least not without help.
Carla didn't think Pharaoh meant the word help quite the same way that she did. She'd been referring to the red pendant she'd acquired from Jolly Red, but Pharaoh used the word as if he was sharing some grim inside joke with her. She gave him a sympathetic nod. We'll talk later, she promised. Pharaoh smiled and crossed to the curtain. He listened for a moment, then lifted the curtain and slipped through into the main hall, holding the fabric for Carla and Jordan to follow him through. However, instead of heading for the outside door, he then took the lamp from Carla and turned toward the men's bathing area.
I always bathe after a night of alchemy, he explained to them with a weary smile. It gets the smell out of my hair. I trust you know your way from here.
Quite well, Carla replied, wondering if he really wanted to take a bath, or if he just wanted to part company as soon as possible. Have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow.
Pharaoh nodded to them both, and blowing out the lamp, he disappeared down the side hall.
That bastard, Jordan grumbled in a low voice as they walked outside. I guess all your people have good night vision.
And hearing, Carla warned him, but at this distance and with the background noise from the water, I doubt he heard you.
I don't care if he heard it, Jordan went on, keeping his voice low with effort. He's one of the senior members of the Abbey, one of the most trusted and respected scholars. Do you know, some even think he might be installed as the next abbot after Banbrook? And it's all a lie! I can't believe he's been living among us all this time, posing as one of the monks.
Carla sighed. Jordan, he hasn't been posing as one of the monks. He's living as one of them. Earlier tonight, you sounded as if you really enjoyed your lessons with him. Does it matter whether he's human? Wouldn't you say that he's earned his reputation as a scholar?
This only enraged Jordan further.
But what was he teaching me? Folklore? You can't call it folklore when a being straight from myth is the one teaching it. It's more like history for you people, isn't it? All his little hints and questions when he already knows the answers. What's all that about?
Maybe he wants you to figure it out for yourself, Carla threw back.
much like you were doing with those children earlier tonight."
Jordan opened his mouth to reply, but a moment later closed it.
"Point to me," Carla thought before she went on.
It was hard keeping her own temper in check. The phrase, "you people," had stung more deeply than she'd expected.
"This folklore you're learning? It's not history for me. I was born 30 years ago, in Terrandor. I know nothing of the elf lands. The number of my people I've met, I can count on my hands with fingers to spare, and one of them tried his very best to kill me less than a year ago.
Jordan, you've a right to be angry with him for what he did to you, but don't you see why he thinks it was necessary? There are a lot of people out there who would gladly kill us simply for what we are, and no few of them are right outside the Abbey gates."
"Oh, I see," Jordan spat, too angry to listen. "So you're taking his side. I guess it doesn't matter where you're born. One elf always stands with another. But what do I know? I'm just a dumb human. If I get in the way, you can just make me forget and leave me somewhere to sleep it off."
"Why bother?" she snapped. "I'm the one who stopped him from erasing your memory, but you've done a fine job of forgetting that all on your own. I suppose you've also forgotten the other times I've had to protect you since I've been here."
She could have stopped there, but she was too angry to hold back now, and touched a finger to the bridge of her nose.
"At least that much should come back to you the next time you look in a mirror."
Jordan flushed. "This isn't about me, it's about him and his blasphemy."
"Blasphemy? He hasn't heard the Father's call. He hasn't taken any vows. He's got no right to wear that robe."
"Are you saying that an elf couldn't hear the Father's call? You didn't ask him. Besides, how would you know? The abbot said you haven't heard it either."
Jordan went very still.
"He told you that?" he said in a quiet voice.
Yes, he did. We talked about you over that first breakfast. I mean, that's why I'm here, after all."
She reached out a hand to touch his arm, but he shrugged her off, backing away.
"I'm sorry if that upsets you. We needed to talk about it. I didn't have the full details of my mission, and I needed more information. Jordan, in 6 months, you have to leave here anyway."
"I don't want to leave here!" Jordan shouted, his voice ringing across the dark yard.
He cringed at the echo of his own voice, instantly realizing his mistake.
He stepped in close, looming over her, his voice barely above a whisper.
"This is my home. I'm happy here, and nothing would make me happier than to stay here forever. But the abbot decides that before the year's out, I have to leave. And why? Because of whose son I am, or because I don't hear the Father's call?"
He shifted his weight back and forth from one leg to another, too agitated to remain still.
"So I have to leave, but that elf," he hissed, "gets to stay, living his lie? What is he doing down in the tunnels, and who else's memories has he erased to protect his precious secrets? Have you thought of that?"
Carla turned her head, hearing the sounds of activity from both dormitories. Any moment now, she expected to see lit candles appearing in windows, or worse, someone coming outside to investigate.
"Tomorrow," she promised. "We'll talk tomorrow."
Jordan shook his head, backing away.
"No, we won't. You tell my father that if he wanted me, he should have come to get me a long time ago. Just stay out of my way."
Then he turned on his heel and ran toward the men's dormitory. Carla watched him go for a moment, then turned in the opposite direction to get back into her dorm before she was seen, her mind reeling with the evening's discoveries and disasters.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.